everyone, and welcome to Divination Episode 13. Divination is a podcast and YouTube show by Elegant Themes, a leader in the premium WordPress theme and plugin market. The goal of Divination is really simple. We want to provide you with the knowledge, insights, and supportive community you need to be successful with WordPress and Divi. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and our topic this episode is Follow Your Bliss. We're going to be talking about the importance of letting your curiosity and passion guide you, particularly in what you choose to learn and the side projects that you engage in. To help me explore this topic, I was joined by Dave Cahill of Frenchtown, New Jersey. Dave is a web designer and developer who has teamed up with his brother to run a local brick-and-mortar computer service and repair shop called RiverNet Computers. Together, they provide a wide range of services, including virus removal and systems optimization, backup data, data recovery, data migration, operating system installation, network security and configuration, web design, web development, and more. As you can probably guess, they're quite the duo. Well, Dave's been an Elegant Themes fan for a long time and a Divi fan since he got his hands on it. He's built a wide variety of Divi websites, including the beautiful website for Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of the popular book Eat, Pray, Love. If you get a chance, you're going to definitely want to check that out. It's at elizabethgilbert.com. When Dave and I caught up on Skype recently, we talked about that and a whole lot more. Here's our conversation. Dave, welcome to Divi Nation.
Thank you for having me.
So what's up in your world, man?
I woke up very early this morning, went to Newark Airport, and I was actually reading the articles you sent last night, and they were excellent.
Nice.
And made some notes and stuff. But yeah, so I had to go to the airport at like 2 or 1:30 or something. And so I was up late, like making notes and reading everything, and then fell asleep for maybe an hour, and then I had to wake up and go to the airport, and then came back, and now I'm like full of coffee, so I can't get back to sleep. So it's been a great morning, but I'm excited. It's when you love what you do, it's every morning can be fun. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you get to take naps in the afternoon if you want.
I do.
Which is nice.
I have a couch in my office, so. And you have to do the thing where you pretend you're not sleeping when someone comes in, like, hey.
You know, right, because you have an actual physical shop or physical store.
We do. And so we have two offices. So my brother and I, and so he's in the main office, and then I'm in the, I guess you would call the art room. He's in the science lab. And so I got the hippie couch in the art room for the hippie teacher.
Nice. Very nice. Okay. So you got a pretty interesting setup. Do you want to show us your, because you were showing me a little bit the other day what your little setup looks like. It looks pretty fun.
It is. I have a lot of art by Dave Burns. I'll do the slow.
Oh, yeah.
Slow. It's a little bit messy. Got my Pro Tools set up over there. I got a Hannibal Lecter Cannibal Soup. a They Live thing right there. It says the Rowdy Roddy Piper Big League Chew mashup.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it says it came here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. I'm all out of bubblegum. Got a lot of books, some guitars, some masks, got a monkey mask. I got this scary mask of Hulk Hogan over there.
So based on some videos you shared with me the other day, a lot of these become props for you, right?
Yeah, I get a lot of solicitors that call me during the day because we have a main landline, a VoIP line. So,
So
there used to be these things called telephones that had these wires. And now, like, you know, we'll get our customers, but I have caller ID. So it'll say like 1-800-ACME. And I'm like, yes. So I like, I'll put my camera on and just make these stupid videos. Cause a lot of our customers, they'll get tricked into these people. It's so much easier to trick someone into taking their money rather than actually hacking, you know? So you'll get these companies like, hello, this is Microsoft calling. You have a virus. Let me in your computer. I'll fix it. And I don't know about you and I know me, I'm like, okay, I'm going to prank this guy. A lot of people, though, they're like, oh my God.
Oh, no, I have a virus?
Yeah, and then they let him in, and the guys, and the way they get away with it a lot of times legally is that they actually don't, they can go in and screw stuff up, but they usually have you do that. All right, well, type this in, Windows R, and type in msconfig and disable your startup items, and then now try rebooting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they don't actually do anything, so it's legal. It's kind of like they provide, and then they say, "Well, fix it for $3 million," and you say, "Okay, I have that." You know, so I'll play so dumb and channel all the ridiculous questions. I'm like, "Okay, Windows R, okay. And then he's like, type in MSC. I'm like, BFQ. No, no, no. M. And I'll just talk over them, or I'll ask them to say their website name over and over. Like, what's your website? And I love doing this because people do it to me all the time. They'll say, I'll say, what's your website? And they're like, www.acme.com. I'm like, at? You know, like, I'll say at. I don't know if you've ever got like the at symbol in an email and a website address. I love doing that. They tell me their website. I'm like, at what? AOL? No, WW. So, yeah. So I've been collecting these videos and putting them up on a YouTube playlist. It's called Trollicitor, trollicitor.com.
That's amazing. We'll have to check that out.
It's very not safe for work sometimes. It depends on the mood I'm in.
Except it's your work, so which is pretty fun.
It's definitely, and it's funny if someone comes in and interrupts, like some little old lady will come with the computer. I'm like, I gotta go.
hang up on her. Like, yeah, you're just, in the middle of this really good thing, but I gotta go help a customer. Nah, now.
Lady, you ruined it. Jeez. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming in. Let me help you with real work.
So. Well, speaking of cool stuff that you read last night from earlier, we typically start off with a segment called This Week in WordPress. Do you want to jump in and talk about some articles?
I'd love to.
All right, let's do it. All right, This Week in WordPress, three articles caught my eye. I sent them ahead of time to Dave so that he could read them and we could talk about them. Article number one is called Podcasters High Quality Microphone Shootout. Obviously, this was something that I was interested in. And in our pre-interview, I noticed that Dave has a nice mic of his own and we talked about sound. And when I saw this article, I thought, hey, we should check it out and maybe we could chat about mics a bit. So this is an article that was published on fizzle.co. And it's basically just as it would suggest, it's a comparison of several high-end microphones or microphones that purport to be high-end. And just sound quality in comparison, price quality or price comparisons. And then at the end, there's this, there's a couple recommendations that are made by the author. But I wanted to get your thoughts on it, Dave. What did you think when you saw what mics were being, paired off against each other? Did you have any thoughts on which one would come out on top?
I've always been an Audio Technica fan. Mm-hmm. I always like their mics, and they're probably all really good. And that's what's cool about the day we live in today is, I mean, I've been recording music since I had a tape, four track thing. Very limited. So I've always been one that believes in, making do with what you have. So one of the best microphones for recording music anyway is a SM57. It's like the standard Shure SM57 microphone for amplifiers. It's $80, $100. And you'll see that at $1 million studios. Mm-hmm. You'll see that microphone at, so the mic I have, I don't even know what brand it is, MXT or something. I just got it. It was cheap. Came with a second directional microphone. The Audio Technica ones look really cool. I haven't tried too many of the USB ones to see the mm-hmm. quality, but that's another thing to consider is also the sound card you're using. I have like a little M-Audio M-Track, which has MIDI and two XLR inputs. Mm. So that is something to consider. Also, the room you're in, if it's very echoey or if you have some soundproofing. I recorded a podcast for my friend, and he was like, how did you get such great quality? And I was like, I didn't really do anything. I just kind of set it up how I normally set it up. So he had like a microphone and stuff. I think he was just in a weird room. It was very echoey.
Oh, yeah.
And that can drastically affect it. And actually reading the article reminded me of this video I watched the other day of one of the most soundproofed rooms in like the world where it is so quiet that you'll go crazy within like 45 minutes. It's at a recording studio.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is so quiet that after like a half an hour, you'll start to hear the blood pumping in your brain.
Oh my gosh. You're starting to notice all the sounds that get canceled out by room tone.
Yeah, unbelievable quiet. The floor is a mesh floor and underneath there's no floor. You're like, in air and underneath is all soundproofing. Yeah. And
so you probably just feel so weird and so especially just isolated.
I just think about the nightmare prima donna, like lead singers, just like, in the studio.
You know, I can't take it anymore.
I just can't take it anymore. I'm just going crazy in here. I've been that person. So I've definitely felt a little crazy because you get really hot in there and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but all of those mics look great. I mean, and for, you know, I think their price range, they stayed between like 100 and 500 bucks. So
yeah,
it's,
I was pretty impressed with the one that he ended up recommending at the end, which was the boom mic that he bought.
Yeah.
And it ended up being great for really, and like kind of like an all purpose vocal mic, which mm-hmm. I thought was pretty awesome. Cause well, that's not one of the issues I've been having with this podcast is, when I record, you know, right now I'm shooting with, you know, HD webcam and I've got kind of my podcaster's broadcasting mic. But when I shoot video in front of a backdrop, I use a boom mic and I have been really struggling with getting good sound quality out of my boom. And I think I might've solved some of those problems, but I'm starting to think that it might be a bit of a mic problem as well, because it's the exact same room that I shoot or that I'm in right now. I just shooting a different angle with the backdrop. And so I'm thinking, you know, if this mic, if I can't end up getting the quality of sound I want out of the mic that I have, I might end up getting this mic that he recommended, the Audio Technica AT875R.
Oh yes, the 875R, better than the 874R.
So it just,
yeah, those, they make great mics. I've always liked Audio Technica. They're a little bit more, I'd say they're like mid range, but I mean, I've recorded on really, really terrible microphones. I've recorded on really amazing manly microphones, and yeah, those things are awesome. I don't know if I'll ever own one, but yeah, those things can make anyone sound like Freddie Mercury. Not
it
anyone.
It is pretty amazing how much better almost anyone's voice sounds with a good mic.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's impressive. Like the technology behind it. And that's what's, a point that I thought about before is just how cool it is to be able to have like a recording studio in your phone with GarageBand, you know, and like,
right, yeah. So,
like I sit in my bed and I'm just like, you know, make some stupid song and then I'll play it on the guitar and then I'll write a whole song that way, just like coming up with the idea when I'm feeling creative, but I don't want to get up, you know, mm-hmm. first world problem. I got to get up. And but I'll write some cool melody and stuff and then go back and then play it on guitar and then, you know, put it out and it'll sell like dozens of copies, you know, and
that's amazing. Dozens.
Yeah, it'll go wood.
I don't mean to brag, but I sell dozens of copies of my MP3s.
A dozen. I like giving out CDs. I'm like, it's a million seller. There's a million in my cellar.
Well, for anyone who's interested in grabbing a mic for a new podcast or any kind of audio endeavor you might have, I highly encourage you to check out the link that we'll provide to this article. It's called The Podcaster's High Quality Microphone Shootout. Okay, article number two is called A Freelancer's Guide to Healthy Business Relationships. And the gist of this article is that, particularly as a freelancer, the way in which you manage your relationships is extremely important. I mean, typically if you're in a salaried job or you're working as part of a large corporation and you have a position there, the only relationships you really have to manage on a regular basis are your immediate coworkers and your boss. But as a freelancer, literally any relationship can turn into a business relationship, and basically how you conduct yourself, you know, kind of across the board can really determine the success or failure of your enterprise. And so they talk about quite a few things in terms of relationship management. You know, they give a case for why relationships are important, the role that trust plays, the role that networking plays, how to strengthen your existing relationships, and how to overcome challenges or problems in a relationship, including ending ones that go sour or go bad.
That's the fun part.
Yeah, right.
Everyone loves that.
What do you have any? Do you have any anecdotes to go along with that?
No, I've been pretty lucky with. I don't know if it's just the timing or what, if we did something right or the area I live in, but there's a lot of really talented, awesome people out there, and you know, it's easy to. You get cut off and you're like, oh, everyone sucks or whatever. Mm. You know, and there's some wacky people out there too. But when you stop, I don't know, a lot of our clients I've met do really interesting things. Actually, a guy yesterday, this guy Phil, who my brother got a call from, he owns the company that makes dust off, like the spray, you know, the air, compressed air that we all use.
There's, for your keyboard.
Yeah. Which is disgusting, by the way, if you ever clean out your keyboard. I do not recommend taking a picture of it. But
Don't do it on a full stomach.
Oh, yeah, it's gross. Especially other people's keyboards. But yeah, I was actually spraying out a computer outside to get all the dust out. And this lady drove by. She's like, you know what all that stuff is, right? I'm like, what? She's like, it's skin. Have a nice day. Drove by. I'm like, you've just ruined this experience for me. So now I wear gloves. I'm like all grossed out by
it. It's skin.
Yeah, it's skin. I'm like, ugh. Ugh. And it is. But yeah, so that guy saw his product, and we made this little like commercial thing on the internets, and he saw that we were using his product, mm-hmm. so he called us up to hire us to do some networking job. My brother did, it was just like a very interesting way to meet a client. He's like, oh, they use my product, I'm gonna go with them, you know.
That's
and
really
he like
cool.
just accidentally saw us, and one thing. A lot of our customers, probably every single one of them, we also are customers of theirs in some way, whether it's
deli or wherever you go on a daily basis, because you're a local
dentist
shop, so.
Right. My favorite dentist in the world, like I and it's all about trust, like the article is saying. I loved candy as a kid, and so I had
so you
to get,
now have to trust that dentist on a regular basis.
It's hard to be like, here you go, here's $1,000, you know what I mean?
Fix my mouth.
And like, I'm so happy to give this guy money because he's, you know, he uses great stuff. He's just very, very, very awesome. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you have to deal with something like a tooth problem or something, it's like hard, and you don't have insurance or whatever, and root canals are like, you know, $2,000 or whatever.
Crazy expensive.
Yeah. So, it, you know, but it's nice to develop a relationship where like, or the car guy, Dan down the road, if he tells me I need a flux capacitor, I don't know anything about cars. If he tells me, I'm like, all right, I trust him because I know he's not pulling my chain or anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the same type of thing with us, you have people that don't, you know, we do repairs, we do networking, web development, a little bit of everything. So you have people that don't understand really what we do. And they're like, I need a computer. Here's a bunch of money. I don't know anything. And you got to take that, you know, and you develop that trust where they're trusting you into providing the right information and doing what's best for them. And you'll make customers for life that way. And you might, you know, everything you could find online with like parts and stuff like that. So we make, you know, all of our money with service. You know, it's like, why am I going to mark up something? You just Google what the price is, you know? So it's like, I get it. You know, so a lot of our vendors, we get the for cheaper prices or whatever, but not all of them, you know, and it's very, very minimal. So we do a lot of our stuff with service and you know, making sure that they're happy and finding out what they like. And one of my web development customers, Andrew, has a company, Machine Art, and this guy's he's got a Wikipedia page for his industrial design. He's like, he knows the stuff.
Anybody could get that, but that's cool that someone else made it for
out of
appreciation.
He had no idea. I tried to make one for me and then it deleted and it says you're not relevant. So that's all I know, which I'm not. But so he's somewhat, you know, so his isn't deleted yet.
You're and, not that important. Sorry.
Yeah. Your you're not the football player, Dave Cahill, obviously. So he came in and I did a little quick little thing for him on, he had two HTML sites and I like did it quick. And he was like, Dave, it's not perfect. And like, I was like, you're right. I didn't like do the best I could have done. And at first I'm like, oh, yeah, yes, it, you know, no, it's, what do you mean? You know, like kind of like almost that feeling of like, well, no, I didn't. But then I'm like, wait, no, that was stupid. Let me fix this. And he has this relationship at first. I'm like, oh God, this guy's really going to be tough to work with. Yeah. My favorite client of all time.
Oh, nice.
He made me better. He pushed me and he trusted me. And it was a challenge and a fun challenge. And he wants like really, and he would give me, which was great with Divi, Illustrator, a layout. He would design his site in Illustrator, PSD files, mm-hmm. in Photoshop. And he's like, okay, I want it to be exactly like this. I'm like, you got it. And before Divi, I made a site for him like that using Thesis and nailed it, perfectly executed. A lot of like hacks and like weird stuff with the hooks and all that and everything with the Thesis theme. And this is 1.87 before 2.0. I don't know anything about Thesis 2.0, but I'm assuming it's much easier to work
with.
It's
supposed to be a lot more, just a lot more user-friendly towards like the designer as opposed to the developer. So.
Yeah. So, and it was cool, but I nailed that job. But then he asked me to do a second site, and this is when Divi was out. I'm like, yes, because it was just going to be so much easier, which it was. And just like, you know, because different pages had different looks, you know, same feel, but very, very interesting design that he came up with. So I was able to like nail that out in a very time-friendly fashion and be able to provide him with different like looks and layouts without it being like a complete overhaul like with what Thesis would have been. So Divi made that much easier. But yeah, the relationship. And I also liked in the article about the other like developers or designers that you have relationships with as well.
And
you know, trading off or you know, you have a customer that maybe you don't have time for, and it's much better than creating a wall of negativity. Like, no, I'm too busy, I can't, but like passing it along to someone.
Yeah, to just say, you know what, I'm swamped right now, but I appreciate your business, you know, when I can be, I appreciate your business and I want to make sure that you're taken care of. So there's someone else that I know who's perfect for this job. They're going to do a good job for you. Let me introduce you. I found that's huge. And if you can develop a few relationships like that with other designers and developers, you know, they're likely going to reciprocate that, because if you can, if you're building the personal businesses of several people, it kind of becomes natural for them to kind of reciprocate, because they're likely going to get just as busy as you are now and eventually have to throw some business back your way. I found it works out. Almost everyone I've talked to so far on the podcast has relationships like that. And it's probably a big reason why they're part of the podcast, because they've been successful in one form or another using the Divi. And a big part of that has been the community and the relationships they've built within the community, not just with customers or clients. We should probably jump to article number 3, UX versus UI. What's the difference and how they apply to WordPress? So this is an article published over on WPMUdev.org, and it was by Tom Ewer. And he explains the difference between UX and UI. UI would be, he starts with UX. So UX would be the cultivation of customer satisfaction and loyalty by optimally developing the usability and positive emotional response of visitor experiences with your site. That's jargony.
Very deep.
Yeah, and it's kind of very like philosophical too, but basically it's, you know, you're creating a positive overall experience. That is the goal. You want something to be, I like the word catharsis, but that's also kind of philosophical. But you want to create some type of experience that evokes a positive emotional response. And then UI are the elements that make that up. So, you know, you want this experience, you have this sort of maybe vague idea of how this experience should come about, and your UI are the elements, the really practical technical elements, like your menu, your colors, your all the little, the navigation, all the little things that actually facilitate that experience. So two different things, very closely connected. What were your immediate thoughts on reading this article, and B, how do manipulating these two or working on these two different things with your clients, you know, how does that typically play out for you?
Well, first they'll ask to make the logo bigger.
Yeah.
So you have to make the logo so big that it'll just unresponsively go off the page and just to mess with them. Now, this actually reminds me, my friend Steve from Arelli Group, he is we trade, I give him my worst customers, he gives me his worst customers, but he's a big UX and UI, it's what he really loves doing, he's very good at it. It's the key things in running a site, and I actually found a really helpful tool that I'd love to tell you about, called Inspectlet. It's a little Inspectlet. INSPECTLET. What it does is you pop this JavaScript code on, you put it on the header, so it's every page or just on one page in a theme template file. But basically, it videotapes, it captures the experience of the user on that page. So I use it for our web inquiry form that I have filled out, which is also handy if you ever get someone that says, well, I filled out the form, and you didn't get it, and it's not in your like Ninja forms or what, when you're like, are they full of it? Or are they honest? What happened? Well, I could actually see what happened, them typing in their name, and I'll actually be able to grab those fields in the rare case that I didn't get their submission. They closed it out before they hit submit, or they don't know what the button does or whatever. Or it's very helpful for when you're developing a site, and because you can actually see their experience. You hear them say, oh, I had a problem with this or with that, and sometimes it's hard to understand what browser, what are they doing. You can actually watch them. They'll click on a link, and it does nothing. And for you, it works in Chrome, maybe Z index.
Sure.
Maybe it's layered correctly. But
so you're saying you actually put this on your client website, so when they come to you with technical support, you can go back and look at it?
Depending on the client, depending on the amount of intricate UI that needs to be done, for testing purposes, to be able to kind of watch them in the wild kind of thing. there's a whole theory about if you have a video camera on you, or if you're just like quantum mechanics, the act of being observed will change
The behavior.
So I find it to be a good way to kind of see them interact with it. And it creates like a heat map of where they clicked. So if they're clicking something that's not doing anything, you can actually see it. It'll turn red. Like it'll create like a little heat map of everywhere they clicked. It'll have their IP address, and it's free. They inspect the program. I think you get up to like 45 saved like interactions or whatever. I'll remove it when the site launches. But I keep it on my one site for the form thing, which has been helpful.
That's awesome.
But and also there's a Adobe plugin called Spectre, SPECCTR, which was perfect for working with my client Andrew, who designed the whole site in Photoshop, and I had to then make that into WordPress, and Divi made that super helpful. But down to like I want it to be 20 pixels in between here and here, for the desktop version. And instead of like me counting the pixels or whatever, you would like click two elements, a vector elements, and then click the Spectre thing, and it tells you the size. You click on the type, you click on it, it'll tell you the font size, the font name, the color. It tells you all the specs, like detailed.
That's
with
awesome.
Just with a click of a button, you could see the padding, the margin, and it makes it easier when you're then transposing that into WordPress when you're kind of working on one screen with one program and then kind of making it in WordPress. And I found that to be super helpful, very, very good for coming up with kind of mock-ups and stuff like that. And I like using Divi to be able to make the mock-ups because it makes it so much easier. And I don't know if you've ever had this issue or happen, but you'll give a client like a Photoshop mock-up or something, and they think that's actually what it's going to look like. That's bare bones, because you don't want to spend, 5 hours making something that they could just be like, throw it away.
So
assuming they're going to be like, all right, fix this, make the logo huge, whatever they're going to say. But if you give some clients like a perfectly geometric, just ugly squares, oh, that's where that's going to be, they'll think like, this looks like the worst thing I've ever seen, because there's, you have to then explain it, and it's an email. So there's a program called Pencil. Pencil is a good mock-up program where it'll make obvious like squiggly lines instead of perfect square shapes.
So they know this is a sketch. This is a mock-up. This is an idea.
Exactly. And you have to then explain it. And if they think that that's real, then you might have some more issues than just that.
But you might want to listen to our previous episode of how to filter out problem clients.
Oh, yeah.
Because that sounds like it's the making of one.
That was great. Yeah, that was great. Great episode. The few and far between, you could spot them once you get ripped off once or twice. I don't know
There's just this weird, it's like a modus operandi of shady people where they don't want to do certain things, or they want something super fast, or they're just certain things that they all do. They email very frantically. They try to like make you feel like there's this huge rush to get something to them, and then they just ghost on you and totally disappear.
Yeah, they go. Yeah. And then it's your fault. Like,
yeah.
You know, and it's like you're waiting to like hear back about checking in to see the progress. Yeah, and they do that wherever they go, whether they're working with a web developer or they're getting their car worked on or you know, ordering food across the street. You know, they're going to be a problem. So you try to spot them. And yeah, you'll get screwed around with once in a while. But once you know, then you know. And I mean, I would never mess with a web developer. You know, we have the power.
So much power over you. If we've got your website, man, that's my brother is hilarious about that. Like he does this too. He's a WordPress designer and developer, and he actually out of New Jersey.
I don't know why I did that.
He has all these like funny things that he'll put on people's websites when they don't pay their invoices, because they'll like, he gets that same thing, like people will skate on him, they'll just be like, you know, they're very attentive the entire creation process, and as soon as it's time to collect the final invoice, like he does, they just try to ghost on him. And so he'll email him, he'll give him a phone call, shoot him a text, whatever, give him enough time, and then I'll send him a warning, be like, hey, you know, like I'll have to take your website down if you don't pay his invoice. And if they still don't reply, then he'll put up this like huge image in place of their website that's like, this person doesn't pay their bills.
Flashing gifts.
It's never failed to work. He's always gotten that final invoice.
Wow, that's like amazingly awesome, passively aggressive.
Yeah,
right. It's like next level.
So like go to log into their site and it's just like, this person doesn't pay their bills. And they're like, no, I'm a local business. I can't have that up.
And like a picture of them in a bathtub when they're 3 years old naked.
Exactly.
If anything, I would just forward them to like a Rickroll video. I'll just forward their site to Rickroll, you know, because I don't really have to do that much except that, you know.
That would be pretty nice. That would be good.
Yeah, but I,
or the anytime, or the fa-la-la-la-la guy.
Yeah, I added that to the Rivernet site. The if you do the Konami code on rivernetcomputers.com with your keyboard, it pops up the troll, like the angry guy, whatever, the rage guy face. He's like, wee, across the page. But I've only had one client try to rip me off. A tale of caution. This guy was a neighbor of ours, and I'm like, this guy will be easy to work with. Mm-hmm. And ends up being just a nightmare, high maintenance, no idea. And I always, it's all about communication. You know, I what I do is I do hourly, but I estimate it and tell them it's going to be this amount of time based on experience and what they want. And almost always now I'll overestimate. It's much easier, much nicer to say, hey, look, it only took this many hours instead of saying, oh God, we need more hours, you know.
More hours, and more money.
Yeah, and but I always give myself that padding that way just in case they're a little wacky. But this guy was like, all right, we're like 5 hours away from the estimate, 4 hours away, 3 hours. He's like, oh, add all this new stuff. All right, we're almost there. All right, we're there. Oh, keep adding new stuff. And then I gave him the bill with like 10 hours discounted anyway, just because he was my neighbor. I thought he was going to be cool. And they were like, well, I can't believe the bill. I'm like, I was so and I was annoyed they didn't answer their phone when I first dealt with them, but it was the best thing ever because I had everything in email.
Yeah.
So now I'm writing, well, on this email, on this day, I'm like spending all this extra time because it was just the point. I was like, I did work so hard to try and make you guys happy and they'll never be happy. And so then I was like, you know what? I talked to my lawyer. I'm like, should I just like give it to them? He's like, what, are you crazy? He's like, charge them. Like, what? I'm like, I don't care. It's not worth the money. You know, it's just not worth this like negativity. I don't care. And I was about to go in and say, you know what, just give me whatever you want. I don't care. I don't need you in my life. And I wasn't able to log in. And luckily, I knew that was going to happen. I created a second admin account. They removed my admin account, and I logged in with the second one I made like 2 days earlier. I was going to go in and just give them the site, and just I wanted to just like log in and make a backup. And I saw that, so I backed up the site, deleted the whole thing. I said, and they were so they were then I had I emailed them from legal at River, and I just made like a fake email address. You know, the bad guys coming. And they paid within like 2 days. And I
put the site back. That's hilarious. That's such a good little tip, though. Just maybe we should, okay, everybody whisper when you say this to a friend, but create an email account that says legal. Your domain.
Yeah.
Use it for scare tactics. And
or lawyers.
lawyers. Yeah, that's very good. I like that. That's nice.
I do that for billing.
Because people who are going to try to screw you anyway. They're probably already scared that they're doing something wrong. They know that they're messing with you. So like the idea that that's going to immediately come back and bite them, like that's probably a pretty good way to get a response out of them is be like, no, you're not getting away with this.
Yeah. And yeah, you don't mess with the web guy. We will put a flaming penile thing on your homepage or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's pretty standard practice.
I mean, I do that just for fun anyway, on my own site, you know, flaming penile. Whatever. That's a great band name. but yeah, they're out there and having a contract. No one wants to end up suing and stuff. You never want the contract to end up having to like use it for what its purpose is, but it's for both parties, you know? So just having that clear indication, but the whole process leading up to it, you can see, are they going to go like rogue, but not always right all the time. You know, sometimes you assume this person, my one client, I thought it'd be very difficult, ends up being my favorite client of all time. Great guy. I actually will work next to him with me.
And I do not, that's pretty rare. Like,
yeah, you don't want to do that with anyone, really.
I learned my lesson a while back with that. I started offering, you know, WordPress coaching sessions, which I actually would encourage people to do if they're good with WordPress. It's a great source of income, but maybe do it as like an e-course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
because in person, you know, like I would do like workshops at libraries or workshops at people's homes if they wanted. And I would just charge, you know, accordingly. Like I didn't really like going to people's homes. So if they wanted that, I'd charge extra. But anyway, this one guy, he wanted me to come to his home. I went to his home. I, you know, charged him extra. He paid everything on time, but it was just the worst. I mean,
is he a sloppy mess?
It was a little messy, but more than anything, he just couldn't listen. Like, you know, so you get in this situation where you're supposed to like, he had some goals that he wanted to accomplish. Like he wanted his website to do X, Y, and Z. And I sat down there and I'm like ready for business. I took notes on a call beforehand. I was like, okay, I'm going to come in. I'm going to show you how to do this large list of things so that you can now do it in the future. And you're going to have, you know, my notes here and I want this to be like an empowering session for you. And all he could talk about is like, you know, other websites he's seen. As soon as I'm like halfway through showing him one thing, he's jumping to the next thing and he's like touching. I mean, it's his own screen, so I didn't really care.
Touched you?
No, touching the screen. He's like, I don't know, like, let's go up here. And I'm just like, oh, this is like all the worst things about working.
Your screen?
It was his, thankfully. Oh, thankfully. But it was just, I mean, I have that natural reaction where I'm like, don't touch the screen.
It's like pointing at art at an art
gallery.
Right,
yes, exactly.
Like, I love that. Right there. Like,
All right, I think we're probably over our time limit on our This Week in WordPress, and we've gotten off track anyway. But we've had some good stories, so I'm happy with it. But I am going to wrap it up. So that is all for this edition of This Week in WordPress. If you're interested in reading the articles we discussed, or in this case, maybe the articles we barely discussed, but other, you know, that you might want to refer to. YouTube viewers can check out the video description for links, and everyone else can find the show notes on our blog. Just go to elegantthemes.com/blog and hit up the community category for Divination episode 13. The next segment of the show is where we get to know our guest hosts in a bit more detail and pick their brain on this episode's main topic. Our guest today is Dave Cahill, and our topic is Follow Your Bliss. And we'll explain a bit more about what exactly that means as we get into it. So let's dive in. Dave, I always like to start off this portion of the show by having our guest host tell us a bit of their story, their backstory in particular. Our theme today is Follow Your Bliss. And it came about because as you were talking to me during our pre-interview, it seemed like you had a pretty circuitous path through life so far. But it's been for the best. And I was wondering if you could maybe retrace some of those steps for us and give us an idea about, you know, where you came from and how you got to where you're at now.
Well, when I was a boy, we didn't have the internet. And then the internet happened. I grew up with computers, with a Commodore 64. I knew how to program really terrible things in BASIC, which I kind of remember. I still have a Commodore, actually. Meaning to set it up. Oh, yeah. This guy gave it in the box with, like, all these games and stuff. But growing up, you know, with Nintendo and, like, video games, it was all, like, new. And it wasn't so immersive today where you could spend, like, you know, 60 hours playing Metal Gear Solid 5 and, you know, be 13% done. But the games were, like, you know, hour, 2 hours, you know, unless it's, like, Ninja Gaiden or whatever. But I just really got into games, but also had enough time to then be creative with it in some way with like basic programming and stuff. And I was really little. I was probably like 8 or 9. And then I remember getting like my first computer and like other computer with a Windows 95 and just kind of learning that and going to school, you know, middle school and high school where computers were like terrible computers. You know, mine wasn't good or anything, but you know, I remember like hitting it like,
the lines on it. Like,
yeah. The big
did your first computers at school have the tracking dial on the front? Did you ever have one of those?
Uh-uh.
I actually had a computer at my school that had a tracking dial for the monitor.
Whoa.
Did you not?
Absolutely. Mine at home did.
I always thought that was so weird. I mean, I think it's super weird now, but then it was like, oh yeah, just like television.
Like tuning in.
Or the VCR or something.
I was so stupid that I had a big giant CRT monitor and it broke and I took it apart having no idea how I could just die at any second with like a metal screwdriver trying to fix the tracking.
Was it plugged in?
It was, it was on, because how was I going to fix it if I could?
Right, because you couldn't see.
The tracking thing didn't work, so I had to go in the screwdriver with this thing all torn apart. I'm like 11, about to be fried.
Oh, my gosh.
And I did that on like a regular basis. And so it's kind of making do, just fixing stuff, you know, clunking, Frankensteining stuff together, you know, putting this slow RAM into this faster thing and not having any idea of like, you know, the theory that your computer is only as fast as its slowest part. So you could put in like, you could put in like 32 gigs of slow memory or 16 gigs of faster memory, and the 16 gigs will be much better than the more.
That's and, like the principle behind why Apple specs often look a little behind some of the more cutting edge stuff, but it's like together it all kind of tends to work a little bit better, a little smoother.
At least for the one round of charger ports. There's a great video of
there's also only one thing that you can do with the computer at a time because there's only one USB port now.
Yeah, that's a little annoying. Isn't it the power button too?
No USB or whatever it is.
I saw that video. It's like the next Apple will have no ports in it. Yeah. Good luck with that.
And then they're like, and when you get it, you're gonna have to buy a new charger because in the middle of this video, we change the type of charger that it takes.
Yeah, that was great. My friend, one of my clients hates Apple, and I actually saved all of his data using Apple. I love data recovery. I especially love data recovery on Apples for some reason. I don't know. I get a kick out of it. I think because like you could, like I've lost data before, and I'm super anal about backing up everything. And you know, photos is very important to me, to no one else. My dumb stuff. I recorded music and 6 months of music. I spilled coffee on it and stuff. And I found that drive recently. And I'm like, oh my God, that was so important. I plugged it in. I was able to get the data within like seconds. Like I was not able to get the data, I don't know, back in 2008, which not even that long ago. But the tools I had today, I was able to get it. Oh man, it was awful. And it was like so not what I thought. Like I was like, oh my God, this is what I've been waiting for.
This is going to be amazing. Like I'm going to recover something like precious. And then you're like, never mind. It's just kind of like, embarrassing.
I'm so glad that we re-recorded it. It was terrible. But yeah, I mean, this one guy, his daughter passed away and all of her writings and stuff, her computer crashed, and I was able to get everything for this guy. And the gratitude he showed, like, you know, I'll spend hours and like I'm not even charging like what I would charge normally. I just like getting it because of the look on their face when you like recover some precious thing. Like, and that's kind of about what we were talking about with client relationships. Like if you could, you're like saving the day for somebody, like saving like kind of like, being a hero in some respect. So, or a doctor or something like that, you know, and that kind of feels good as a kind of a dummy, to be considered like something as important as that, you know, it's kind of cool. So, I do like doing the data recovery, and most of the time, as long as the drive's not like clicking, but there's a great company called Fat Guy Bald Guy out in California. I love the name and immediately was like, these guys are cool. They do data recovery. They have a clean room, a laboratory. Like,
oh, nice.
When you rebuild the drives, there can't be any like dust, or you have to wear all like full. It's crazy. And they do flat rates and they only charge you if they get the data. So I find that to be very cool in the case that you have, you know, financial data that need to be recovered. And actually, one other interesting side note, we had a client that had lost data, and we resell Carbonite, and that does a cloud backup for disaster recovery. You know, you can have all these backups and there's a fire, what's that going to do? So They do, I'm sure you're familiar, they do the cloud backup. Well, we were able to recover this QuickBooks file and a couple different versions days before and stuff. And by doing that, the accountant was like kind of annoyed. He's like, why are all these versions? But then the accountant looked into it, discovered that one of the employees there stole $100,000 from the company.
What?
And because we accidentally helped and figured out and got multiple versions, more than he wanted. He was kind of like, I got all these versions. But actually was able to pinpoint and see where all this money was going. It was in the newspaper. The lady went to jail. She worked there for 12 years.
Wow.
And was paying herself and covering her tracks. And it was it was just crazy accidentally helping them with that. And
that's how you make enemies in the community.
luckily
and friends.
Part of me, I was glad that they didn't mention our name in the paper, But I was that would have been cool. We helped them. But it was just seeing one of our clients getting ripped off like that.
That's no fun.
Upset me, made me mad. So we wanted to do everything we could to help this guy. He's one of our favorite guys. And So basically, I learned how to do computers on my own, and I left high school when I was 15 and stayed at home and infected the school library. I think this is the Statute of Limitations is passed on this now. I'm very old. I'm 32 or something. So, so back when I was hacking using kiddie programs Sub 7, we would, infect computers and control them. When I was at home, I'd talk to my friends and stuff.
So you dropped out of high school to hang out at home and work on computers?
And talk to them at high school. And I would get a ride to the school and then take the bus home to their house for a year after I left, until they figured out what are you doing? You don't even go here anymore. But it was much easier than getting a ride all the way to their house.
That's
I just get a ride.
Funny.
The school is only 4 minutes away. And so I did that for a while and got my GED. I'm not a test taker. I would be writing songs in school and just had a great time in high school, but I was just not interested in anything I had to learn there. Christopher Columbus after the 100th times was whatever.
When did building websites become a passion of yours?
I was 15. My friend Petey introduced me to GeoCities. And
nice. They had kind of good memories with GeoCities.
Flying coasters.
Yeah, kind of good memories.
Yeah,
nostalgic memories, we'll say.
Yeah, and we were speaking in the pre-interview about there's a GeoCities archive. I'll have to send you the link. Someone archived all the old ones, and I really want to find my old terrible band site. We had dripping blood and just the dumbest stuff. But at the time, it was here's our website. And it was cjb.net because I didn't want to pay for .com.
Dude, and people loved it, too. They're
whoa, look at this. Dude, a WAV file is going to take forever to download this and let's do it. I remember it being sorry, was that me?
No, yeah. I just got a fly flew into my eyeball.
Oh, man. Yeah, I hate when flies enter the office. I had a cricket in here. It was driving me crazy.
I feel like I feel like the episode of Breaking Bad right now where the flies in the lab. Did you see, are you a fan of Breaking Bad?
Oh, yes.
So you know the episode where there's the fly in the lab and he almost kills himself trying to kill the fly? That's how I feel right now. I've been chasing this fly for 2 days. And of course, right in the middle of the interview, it's going to fly into my eyeball and be like, hey, still here.
Or in your mouth.
Yeah.
Are you going to hear when you're editing
Oh, probably. It's probably gonna drive me crazy.
I haven't heard it. I had to deal with that once with a video with this fly sound.
So back to websites. You started building websites when you were 15.
97, I think. I was 18 when 2001. I was 18. So obviously not a math major. simple math is confusing me right now. I'm thinking about other things instantly. It's I can't even take tests. So I remember it being WordPress has the content editor and then the code editor. I remember being able to switch back and forth. I don't know if I'm correct in that, but that's how I learned code. And back then it was easy to learn source code by looking at the code. It made sense. It was very simple tables, and you know, it just was easier to manipulate. And this is before Firebug or developer tools, source
Inspect
viewer,
Inspect element, or anything like that.
Yeah, so you would just open up View Source in Notepad, and using Netscape Navigator or whatever, and just kind of seeing that laid out. And it was a great time, because I feel like if that were me today, I would be like, oh no, this is too much. Like seeing all, you know, the meta og data and like all these, you know, Google Analytics script or something, it would just be like too much, I think, without some serious training. So when I learned, you know, it was much easier to understand, and then just kept doing it, making sites for friends, bands, always in a band, always had like a something to make, which is key to the whole thing, because you need practice. made a bunch of HTML sites. And then I had like a whole bunch when we opened the first site. And this is before I heard about WordPress, but I thought it was like for templates and like stuff for not custom. I didn't even realize the potential. And this is probably in 2009. We opened in 2010. So like 2009, I was still doing HTML. And then right in 2010, right after I put our ugly HTML site up, found about WordPress, and I'm like, all right, I'll try this stupid thing. And then I realized, oh my God, this is the way to go. And the time saving and the way to automate things and having fun with it, it's not a chore. Oh man. And then being able to give clients the control of the site afterwards, you know, made it just so much more enjoyable for them. Then they could take the site, because, you know, it's definitely more fulfilling when you make a site for a client and they just take it and they run with it and they add content. And you'd be surprised, some of the clients that will and some won't. One of the site I donated for the Frenchtown, the borough here, the town, I donated a website for the town and the police as well. And the chief of police, of all people, he's like adding content. He's like,
this is great.
Yeah, out of all the people, he's a good guy. I didn't think of anyone, he would have been the one that would have taken it, you know, so strongly. So yeah, it's cool to see that. So. Having the tools now that we have today makes it a lot more a lot easier to work with and stuff. So especially with Divi has made things a lot more enjoyable and being able to come up with stuff very quickly and beautifully. And I got to commend Elegant Themes for their products over the years, because always been a fan, always end up coming back. And ever since Divi, I've, you know, just exclusively loved using that. And like, I'll try a different theme or something. And I'm actually looking forward to trying the builder plugin with some random theme. Just to see. But I just keep end up using the Divi theme because I just like it, and I know it in and out, and the code behind, you know, underneath the hood.
Yeah.
It's just always very clean and very easy to understand and stuff, because. You know, PHP is one of those things, if you make one wrong entry, one wrong keystroke, nothing works. You know, it's like that. Yeah. So it's like, I'm very anal with backing up. I'll make dates, you know, where I'll update, you know, even just a style sheet. And if I'm going to step away for 20 minutes, I'll save with the date, you know, and the time of that version, just in case I come back and like start going into something and break something. Yeah. I just go back to that, you know, because, you know, once you do that enough, especially if you're not sure what you're fixing yet or how to fix it the right way, the best way, and you want to try some things, having those backups are very, very important. So,
well, now that we kind of have a timeline, so to speak, or some context from where you were kind of way before you even ever thought you'd be doing whatever it is you're doing now to running your company, RiverNet Computers, and all the things that you do there, building websites, doing setting up networks, doing support service and physical repairs. You know, I think this might be a good time to sort of contextualize the topic of following your bliss. And I guess I want to make sure what I mean by that is, you know, when I say follow your bliss, I'm actually kind of just making a reference to one of my favorite writers is Joseph Campbell. And what that idea or philosophy means is basically just letting your curiosity, letting the things that make you passionate kind of be your guide, particularly in what you choose to learn or pursue with the time that you have available to yourself. I mean, you know, I don't want to suggest that people should drop whatever it is they're doing. You know, we all have to pay our bills. We all have to have certain practical restraints on our life. And I'm not suggesting people blow those off. But there's definitely something to be said for you know, taking a modicum of risk or just dedicating a certain set amount of time to pursuing things that you're passionate about, things that you're curious about, things that you want to learn more about just for the sake of those things, and letting those sort of evolve. One of my personal observations, this is something I've noticed in my life and in the lives of others who take this sort of approach, is that the end result tends to be that a lifestyle or a life rhythm emerges over time that's sort of uniquely suited to that person. And so whatever they end up doing with these passion projects or these passion pursuits becomes something that it turns into something that they're sort of uniquely suited for. And they tend to thrive in that environment, whatever it is. And I can't help but look at you in your office, and it's just like very you from what, you know, from what I know. And the way that you describe your days, it's very much like, this is the environment that you are meant to thrive in. High school or the traditional path that we all kind of have to start in, that didn't seem to suit you very well. I know it never really suited me that well.
Yeah.
But following these passions, for you, it was like, you know, goofy hacking and music and all these other things. And all of a sudden, before you know it, you have this sort of technical toolbox that you can start to tap into. And that becomes something that has some potential, and you can follow that trail. So I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, I've just kind of talked about how these are my observations. Have you noticed that that sort of thing has happened in your life?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I didn't really even start to respect or enjoy learning until after I left high school for whatever reason. And having everything, you know, on the internet, just like, I love reading about stuff. You know, when I was in high school, I just wanted to goof around and play music and do whatever. And then when I left, I had all this time and like learning stuff, and like it was this whole new world with like ICQ and Merck, you know, IRC, and like chatting with these weird people about, you know, like I remember when like 9/11 happened, and like I have logs of our IRC on that day of this like hacking chat room thing that I used to be a part of called TNT. And I found the logs of like that, just seeing it like play out, and just like the stuff we talk about is just ridiculous. And the whole learning experience. We used to run a site that had like so much traffic and made no money. It was the hackers.com, HAQERZ. And it was just like stupid tools and stuff. But like the whole learning experience, getting viruses, like, oh, what is it? Oh God, what did I just do? You know,
oh,
and
no.
Just destroying my whole computer. And that's how I learned, you know, how to fix it, how to recover from that, like purposely giving myself viruses. And now come to respect those things and be able to help people that get like ripped off by like these, you know, because what we were doing back then, it was way before people would make money from viruses. It was just like pranks or whatever, or stupid stuff.
it's more playful than anything, even if it was, you know, maybe unfortunate for some people.
Yeah. And actually some people I know created this thing we called VicNet, which was before botnet, which was where infecting thousands of computers to then all simultaneously run a certain task or target, which is what a botnet is. Yeah. And this is like, he coined the term VicNet, this guy from Canada. And it was just like crazy. No idea what we're doing. No idea the risk involved. You know, like just like, oh, whoops. You know, yeah. Like
I have a friend who logged into his school library or into his school administrator's accounts from home and like changed a grade just because he
like war games.
Yeah, exactly. But he actually did it, and he did it because he was going to get grounded or something, and he didn't want to like not be able to go on a trip.
Much easier.
Right. Like you were saying, you guys had no idea. He just thought it was something funny to do, and it was like a quick fix to a problem he had. All of a sudden, like 2 weeks later, like he's got law enforcement at his door and they're, you know, he can't go on planes with computers now or something weird like that. Like,
or liquid.
Or liquid.
What a nightmare.
Yeah. So he has all these weird restrictions on him now, 'cause he was in the kind of the same thing where it was like, I just want to learn, I want to play, and it kind of burned him. But not to say that you guys shouldn't learn and play.
No, yeah, hopefully he'll get a job. Yeah. That's like,
Now he's doing very well. He wrote some software for a fast food company, and he's very well off.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, you gotta like when you see those types of people, you know, work, you know, you can nurture. Like I know some kids these days. When you see it, you see it. My nephew, like, I always want to introduce computers to him, but in a way that was going to be fun and for him to create and not be like, you better learn computers, you know, where he's going to be like quarterback or something instead, like the opposite, you know. So I'd be like, here you go. But also in a way, I mean, he's just turned 11. He's got a YouTube channel. He's editing videos.
Oh, nice.
Like I got him like a video editing software. He knows it better than me now. And it's just great because he's creating, he's making movies. He's got like all these movies. And it's just so cool to see somebody take that and see the love that I had when I was younger and be the same way. Because, you know, there's so many distractions these days with, like I was saying, like immersive video games. It's not like, you know, you play Mario 3 and you're like, all right, cool. That was cool for an hour. Now it's like this, you know, you're
World of Warcraft and you're like, whatever. And you're,
it's like a commitment, you know, or my vice was Grand Theft Auto 5 and seeing how much time I spent playing that stupid game, which was such a good game. But my girlfriend hated it. My fiance, she hated that game. I made her play it, though. And these like 13-year-old kids are like talking smack. Actually, you mentioned that in the last episode. I started laughing. Yeah. That's the worst feeling.
Well, I think something that's super cool about, like, you know, whether it's, you know, a new generation learning YouTube or what you did or, you know, what any of us has done where we just take something that is fun for its own sake and we pursue it until, you know, those skills become valuable. And what I think is so cool about that kind of mode of living or mode of pursuit is that whatever you end up doing with those skills, it brings with it a sense of playfulness, a sense of purpose, a sense of like wonder and curiosity. Whereas like, if you're just doing what you're supposed to be doing, you don't really have that. You don't really have those things that come along with that. You're just, oh, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So there's maybe a sense of security in that. Maybe a sense of like comfort.
I can't do that. As soon as I'm told to do that, I'm like, I'm not doing that. Exactly. I'm going to do the opposite for better or for worse. Yeah. I just don't. So
I think that's just really, really interesting. And I would really encourage people to maybe find something that they're passionate about, something that they're curious in, and just sort of make some time for that.
There's a great book I'll recommend from one of my favorite customers. She's an author, Elizabeth Gilbert, and she just put out a book called Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. And it's like a manifesto, and it applies to all sorts of creative minds. And you know, she's an author, but this book transcends, like, it goes into just all everything that we're just discussing about, you know, where she has this great story about when she's about to embark on something creative, she it's like a car ride, and it's her creativity and fear. And she says, fear sits in the back seat, and fear will not touch the radio. You can come along with you can come along on the ride, fear, but you are not to touch the radio. You're not to open the windows, and above all, you are never to drive. But you are welcome to be here because you can't have one without the other. It's So her book is just incredible, and I highly suggest anyone that's interested in the creative realm to check it out and give it a read. It's very good. The whole process, I find that having limitations to things are also kind of good. Like, I have a guitar with, like, maybe it'll have like 3 strings on it, and the things you'll come up with that instead of like a full 6 strings or whatever,
it's
kind of interesting and different, or different tuning, or working with, email newsletters where you have to kind of pretend it's 1998 again.
Right, because it's just
old school HTML. Yeah. And it's a challenge, and it's fun though in a way, but it's like, oh God, you can't do, box shadow or like curved corners or border radius. You have to pretend it's old school days and creating it, 600 pixels wide. Mm-hmm. So I find that to be a kind of way to be creative, like out of necessity from the limitations you have, So I find that to be a lot of fun. In a way to come up with some new ideas and new things. And I kind of just lived my life that way. Me and my brother were partners. We're, I always tell the old ladies that come in, he's a smart one, I'm the cute one. But we get along great, and he knows his stuff, man. He does all the stuff. He's more of the scientist where if he has a 1 where a 0 is supposed to be or whatever, that stuff won't work. Where I like to have more abstract where, I like to have, there's no right answer kind of thing. You know what I mean? Where it's like, it could be many things. So I find that to be comforting. And, you know, for like when I draw, I'm not going to draw like a basket of fruit. I'm going to draw like a basket of aliens or something that doesn't exist, because then you can't ever mess up because there's no right answer, you know. So my fruit doesn't look good, but I can draw an alien.
So before we interviewed, in one of our conversations beforehand, I asked you to maybe create a list or gather up some things that have contributed to you embracing this idea of following your passions and curiosity. You just named the book Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, whose website you created, by the way.
Yes.
I encourage everybody to check it out. It's really nice. It's made with Divi. It's elizabethgilbert.com. Really,
and type Big Magic somewhere on the page for a little surprise. If you click on an empty part of the screen, just type in Big Magic.
It's fun. You guys like it. So besides that book, which again, I also recommend people check out because I plan to do it as well. Are there other things that you came across that influenced you in this direction? I mean, I know you probably seem to just be that kind of person who like naturally rebels against the traditional path, which is cool. I think I'm a little bit like that myself. But in my own life, I can definitely like find sort of, I guess, breaking points where I broke off because of a specific influence of a path that I was on. Do you have anything like that you maybe listed or thought of that?
Oh yeah. I mean, definitely my parents are awesome. And my brothers, two biggest influences, because, you know, I was like, hey, do I have to go to school next year? My parents are like, nah. I'm like, really? Oh my God. That was so easy. But I was like, oh my God. My brothers are like, you better work, you know, don't be sitting around being lazy. And I immediately got I was 15, six, just turned 16 or something, like $10 an hour cash painting. You know, I was like, oh my nice. God, mad money, I'm making it rain. You know, and nothing to spend it on. Mm-hmm. And just having them being so awesome was the big, especially now today with my brother. You know, I have two older brothers, and you know, being partners with him, it's just we vibe off each other. And you know, he knows the right way to do things. He wouldn't have opened up that monitor and started tinkering with the screwdriver. I did. But I'm like out of the box kind of idea, and we kind of come together where like I'll suggest something maybe he didn't think of, or he'll tell me, Dave, don't put the fork in the outlet kind of thing, like something, you know, or just stupid stuff like taking the battery out before you open the laptop, you know, before you start make sure the battery's out, or when you unplug the desktop, hold the power to drain the capacitor, make sure there's no power in there. Safety first, everyone. So there's lots of things that like I didn't even know. That, you know, that I learned from him and vice versa. And we make a really good team. And just, I think another thing, once I realized that I know a lot and I absolutely know nothing at all. And I think that's important to remember.
It's like keeping both of those in your head at the same time.
Yeah,
it's like, yes, I have a lot of stuff that I came across or that I've experienced or learned. But it's like the more you learn, the more you know that you don't know that much.
Yeah.
All.
All I know is that I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I love that because I've seen where some computer people are like socially inept or they think they know everything. And it's like, you can't learn then. And I love like not knowing, you know, or you know, SEO is going to change drastically next year, you know, or earlier this year I like the whole thing and everything is just changing so rapidly and keeping up with the pace and also, you know, Elegant Themes blog, which I'm a huge fan of.
Yes.
Yes. There's just a Smashing Magazine. I love reading Smashing Magazine. That inspires me. Their books are just beautifully printed. And I fill my walls up with art and listen to music. And also the clients, the relationships. We're lucky that I can turn away people that might not be, you know, fulfilling in some way, you know, or maybe they're weird or wacky or they stink or something. But being able to say, this guy is awesome, he's inspires me. Or Elizabeth, who is like so wonderful to work with. And actually it was funny last year, her last book, I debuted a New York Times bestseller. I did about 5 author websites last year. So she was on Best Fiction. And then his book came out and he was on the bestseller list at the same exact time, same week for nonfiction, I think it was. But they were both on 2 separate lists of the top 10. And then her new book, we worked on really hard to promote it and everything. That debuted at number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list. So just like seeing these things, and I run a website called We Are Change. My friend Luke, he does everything. That's a Divi site. WeAreChange.org, and that gets so much traffic, unbelievable. I have a dedicated server just for just for his site. And unbelievable. And having that is a lot of fun because I've never had a site get so much traffic. And, you know, he's had the site for a while and he confronts politicians and stuff. And definitely check him out. He's a journalist. And yeah, so I kind of run the behind the scenes thing for him and all the labor of love. He's a good friend of mine. And it's just a fun project to be able to have a site that's getting hundreds of thousands of hits.
Yeah.
And like,
so these are just things that like, as you, cause it's like, you find it fascinating and fun yeah, and you're working on these projects and you're, so it sort of becomes self-feeding. Like the more you do, the more work you get because people mm-hmm. see it, the more work you get, the more interesting problems you discover and you have to kind of get to the bottom of, and then all of a sudden you've got a bigger portfolio. And yeah. So I guess that's one of the things I want to leave people with, thoughts I want to leave people with is just the idea that, you know, when you start going down this path, when you start feeding that curiosity, that passion, that interest, you know, it sort of starts to self-perpetuate and it can really snowball into something awesome, but it does take those like first steps, you know, like for you, you know, you've been operating in this mode for quite a while. You've been operating this mode probably for as long as you can remember. And I think it sounds like a big breaking point for you from the traditional path, so to speak, was that moment where you said, you know, I don't even want to do this last year of high school. I'm going to go learn about computers. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it was I graduated high school and I thought, you know, I'm not going to go run track somewhere, run cross country somewhere on a scholarship. I'm going to go learn how to make movies. And so I went and did film school.
Yeah, nice.
Or a film internship rather. And so I want to really leave people with maybe, I guess, since we both kind of spoke to this topic, want to leave people with, I guess, our encouragement for the most frictionless way for someone to start following their bliss.
Well, when you first meet somebody, be as nice as possible and then treat them exactly as they treat you after that. But look at this world. We got space computers and stuff in our hands and stuff. And the whole industry, it's like, you know, it's all computers in the future. And there's so much work. There's so much work that, like, there could be three other RiverNet computers in town here, and we'd all be fine. Because yeah. There's so much stuff. And
I tell that to people all the time about Divi. I'm like, get involved in Divi because you're never going to run out of work.
Never.
Ever. Even if it's just... like even if it's just working with people inside the immediate Divi community, there's like over 300,000 people there. Like you're never going to run out of work.
Never. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I was glad about my nephew picking up video editing and just, you know, using a computer for creativity. Cause it doesn't matter what you're doing. Mm-hmm. If you're good at cooking, there's something that, you know, but maybe you don't want to open up a restaurant or whatever, but maybe you can talk about, you know, Cake Boss blog or something. I don't know.
Sure,
or
like, yeah.
Make a blog about it or, you know, and there's ways to make money and I mean, if it's using a computer and until the robots take over and start eating people in the streets, I think we'll be making Divi sites for until then. So, you know,
that's a good note. And I wanted to say that, you know, from my perspective, and I think you're kind of saying this too, in a way is that, you know, if you want to have an avenue for pursuing something that you're just really interested in for its own sake, pick a side project. Just don't throw caution to the wind necessarily and leave whatever it is you're doing if you're not ready for that or if you have responsibility, if you have a family you have to support. But pick a side project. Just spend 5 hours a week doing something that you really...
Make a fake band.
Yeah, that you really love, that you're really crazy about. And these side projects, just like we've talked about, you know, if you're doing it and you're doing it passionately and you're learning about it and you're trying to become better at it, these things have a way of snowballing. And, you know, it's something I've seen with the guests over and over again on the show is a lot of them, you know, they kind of intended to be Divi specialists, but at the same time, they also were just at first kind of interested in WordPress, thought, what's mm-hmm. this thing? I could probably do this. And they let their curiosity for, you know, how does this work? Well, I should probably go check out the PHP template file. Or how does this work? I should probably learn how CSS functions. And they just kept digging long enough to all of a sudden they're like, well, I may not be an expert, but I'm definitely dangerous enough to make a go at this. And that's where it started for them, or that's where the new chapter started for them. So I would just encourage everybody, if you're fascinated with anything in this world of web design, of WordPress, of Divi, just dive in, spend a little bit of time as often as possible until it turns into something.
It is possible to do something that you love. So if you're sitting somewhere and you're looking around, you're like, I hate this place I'm in. I love this podcast, but I hate this job. Pick it up because you could do it at home. It's fun. It's awesome. There's no shortage of work. And Divi makes it so much easier and enjoyable compared to pre-Divi, you know.
Yeah.
PD and AD.
Well, we're officially at like an hour and a half on the recording. I know I'm going to have to edit this down. So we got tons of content for this show. We're going to have to sign off. Dave, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank
Divi
you very
Nation.
Much.
I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, we got to do it over again. I'm just kidding.
Oh, I forgot to hit record.
We said it at the same time. All right. See you, man.
As always, I'd like to extend one more big thank you to Dave for coming on the show. I had a great time talking with him, and I hope you all enjoyed the interview as well. We've got one more segment left on the show, a brand new edition of Divi Quick Tip. This time around, I'm going to show you how to convert a Divi menu item into a call to action button. Check it out.
In this Divi Quick Tip, I'm going to show you how to turn a regular menu item into a call to action button. Here's how it works. First, in your admin, navigate to Appearance, Menus. Make sure the menu you want to add your call to action button to is selected, and then add a custom link to it. The key to this step working is to make sure that your link text is wrapped in a span, and then you're going to want to add this CSS class to it. You can obviously pause the video to copy this exact CSS class, or grab the example link text here from our accompanying blog post. Once that's done, click Save Menu. Next, navigate to Divi Theme Options. Scroll to the bottom of your general settings and add the following CSS into the CSS panel. This code and the example custom link from the first step are available via the accompanying blog post for this quick tip. If you're watching on YouTube, just check the video description for the link. Everyone else will want to visit our blog at eleganttheme.com/blog. The post you're looking for is Divi Nation episode 13. It's in the community category. When you've copied and pasted this code into your CSS panel, go ahead and click Save. You should now be able to view your changes in the front end and what was formerly just a standard menu item like this link will now have a call to action button for its styling. If you'd like to further adjust or tweak the styling, you can just get back in the CSS that we had you copy over and you can tweak the stylings to your preferences. Well, that's all for this Divi Quick Tip. If you have a Divi Quick Tip request, you can leave them in the comments wherever you're watching this, or you can email them to me at podcast@eleganttheme.com with the subject line, Divi Quick Tip Request. Thanks for watching.
Well, that's all for this episode of Divi Nation. Next week on the podcast, I sit down with Tammy Grant of Sunflower Blog Designs to talk about playing the long game, investing in your future success today.
I want to pave the way for my children. My parents were not entrepreneurs, and my husband's parents weren't. And I'm the first really in my family that has really taken an interest. So I'm really hoping that I can pass down all of my knowledge and experience to my daughters so that they could move forward with that same mindset.
That's all for this episode of Divi Nation. See you next week.